Welcome to the podcast service of Sydney's FM 103.2. Available on the web at fm1032.com.au.
Well, the idea of children being forced to become soldiers is a repulsive one, but it's nonetheless a reality for many children growing up in various parts of Africa. Author Michael Wessels says there is hope, though, for these young combatants, and he joins us now. Michael, welcome to Open House.
Thanks very much. It's a real pleasure to be with you.
Who are these child soldiers and how many of them are there in the world?
Well, we don't have very exact quantitative estimates. It's fundamentally hard to get accurate data from war zones, and the commanders who recruit children often try to hide their abuses and exploitations of children. But we think that there are about 250,000 children at any point in time inside armed groups. Not all are combatants. Oftentimes they perform roles such as laborers and porters, spies, bodyguards, medics, and even sex slaves. What they are subjected to is unspeakable brutality. Oftentimes kids who are abducted at young ages by groups such as the so-called Lord's Resistance Army in northern Uganda are forced to kill members of their own villages and in some cases members of their own families precisely to break the bonds between they and their village mates and to make it impossible for them to go home again.
Mm. And they're predominantly in Africa?
It is not. It's really a very much a global phenomenon. You find it in countries such as Colombia and Latin America. In Asia, you have more than a handful of examples from Afghanistan to Sri Lanka to Philippines. And then there are quite a number of examples in Africa. And, you know, when you get up to countries such as Kosovo and, you know, Bosnia, you know, you find similar phenomena. And there are linked phenomena regarding involvement of youth in gangs in cities around the world.
How are they being coerced to join these armies, whether it's the Lord's Resistance Army or whatever it is? I mean, how are they so vulnerable?
Well, the way it happens is very diverse and contextual, but broadly, you know, one of the most standard techniques is called press ganging. Groups will, you know, pull up to a marketplace or to a camp for displaced people, or maybe even a school, and they pull out a gun and say, "You come with us or you die." Mm-hmm. And they are marched off, and oftentimes they are forced to kill people or to drink blood, or to, you know, engage in acts of violence that are really quite unspeakable. And it's a means of hardening them to brutality and preparing them for killing. In other contexts, what happens is sometimes children have no food or they have no protection. They may be separated from their parents, for example. And sometimes they decide to join an armed group because it's their only path to survival. In still other cases, such as in conflicts occurring in places like Colombia or Afghanistan, you find that children join because they believe that armed groups are part of a liberation struggle. So, for example, in Afghanistan, the forces of the Northern Alliance that were fighting against the Taliban and were actually never conquered by the Taliban oftentimes had youth who decided to join because they thought it was the best means of protecting their religion, their way of life, and they, you know, see violence as a means of liberating themselves from oppression.
Wow. What kind of impact is this activity, these soldiering activities, having on the children's health?
Well, the health consequences are really profound. I mean, the surface of it is, you know, shrapnel and, you know, bullets and, you know, all the obvious wounds and disabilities and disfigurement that go with it. But what you really find is even more difficult is the extreme hunger, in many cases the malnutrition, the exposure to sexually transmitted infections, including HIV/AIDS. And you find tremendous impacts on mental health and psychosocial well-being as well. For girls, you find that the impacts are highly gendered. So, for example, UNITA, the armed group in Angola oftentimes used girls as sex slaves and porters. And when the girls were portering, they had to be quiet. And so if they were mothers and they had young babies, they were oftentimes forced to kill their babies because otherwise a baby's cry might give away their position. But I would say that the health consequences pale really by comparison to the social consequences. I mean, what does it mean to raise a whole generation of people, not as citizens who are educated and who have positive values and positive roles, but as people who are hardened to killing and who are oftentimes plied with drugs, thrown into combat, and made to take war and violence as necessary and sort of normal parts of living.
Michael Wessels is our guest. We're talking about his book, Child Soldiers, From Violence to Protection. Michael, who is exploiting these children? I mean, you mentioned the Taliban over in Afghanistan, that children have been recruited for that cause. But who else are doing it? I mean, and will they ever be brought to justice?
Well, I think, you know, it's a complicated question. That on the surface, it looks like non-state actors, that is, the armed opposition groups, the guerrilla groups. So, for example, the Liberation Tigers of Tamil Alam in Sri Lanka recruit girls as well as boys, and girls are often, you know, encouraged to become suicide bombers. You know, in Colombia, you find one of the main opposition groups recruits children. But oftentimes, it's states that also recruit children. And sometimes they don't do it directly. They do it indirectly by means of paramilitary groups that they support. The problem is not just so-called rogue nations. The Convention on the Rights of the Child has an optional protocol for children in armed conflict that makes it legal for states like the United States to recruit children under 18,
really?
At ages 16 and 17, yes, if it's voluntary and if it's with parental consent. But what that does, I think, is it sets an inadvertent standard that says, at some level, it's okay, you know, to recruit young people, to militarize them, and to get them ready for combat. Now, that same instrument also bars them from hostilities. That is, they can't fight until they're 18. But I think the message is really quite unmistakable. The idea is that young people, who I think ought to be pursuing education and developing life skills and, you know, becoming young adults as peaceful citizens, are really being, you know, trained for war.
How are children breaking free, if they do? How are they actually breaking free?
Well, oftentimes they break free by means of cleverness. And so, you know, you find lots of children, for example, who plan their escape from the very first moment that they're captured. But it's extremely risky. And in a place like Uganda, for example, the Lord's Resistance Army, if they capture an escapee, they basically have all the recruits circle that person, and then they have to beat the person to death. Groups such as UNICEF and lots of NGOs such as Christian Children's Fund and Save the Children Alliance, International Rescue Committee, do a lot of work to try to create venues for children who have escaped or who have found a way outside of armed groups to reenter civilian society. One of the fictions or myths that goes on is that somehow they're a lost generation. They can't come back because the argument goes they're either bloodthirsty killers or maybe they've got twisted values and they can't, you know, ever really find their way back psychologically or socially. And in many ways, I wrote the book to try to disprove that myth, because the experience of most practitioners worldwide is that the vast majority of children, in fact, can reintegrate, but they need proper supports. And then lots of children say that they won't be able to adjust to a civilian life unless they have a means of earning a living. And so, you know, doing vocational training and trying to give them small loans to start up businesses or to learn skills that will enable them to enter civilian roles, such as father and mother, is really important. Lots of children want education more than anything. And you can imagine the problems of having a child who's 14 years of age, but who was a commander and made lots of life and death decisions. They come out of the armed group, and now they're told to go back. They've got the equivalent of a third grade education, and now they're told to sit in a classroom with 10-year-olds. Yeah. It's just not going to work.
So how do you work around that?
We work around that by creating, you know, special classes for older children and accelerated learning programs so that, you know, they don't have to spend 7 years getting a very basic education.
For those of us who are listening to this, it's so easy to be overwhelmed by what you're telling us and just go, this seems to be so overwhelming, it's so horrific, it's so evil. What can the average person on the street do to bring a change in this whole area of child soldiers?
Well, I think one of the simplest things to do is to try to support the Coalition to Stop the Use of Child Soldiers, which has mounted a global campaign to make 18 years the minimum age at which children can be recruited by any group, including, you know, the U.S. or U.K. And then another one is to help criminalize the activity of recruiting and exploiting children in these horrible ways. The International Criminal Court has actually begun prosecuting recruiters from countries such as Democratic Republic of Congo. If the International Criminal Court continues to get a lot of popular support and funding, I think that will improve. And I think raising awareness about children's rights is terribly important. And, you know, one can write to one's representatives in government and urge them to deliver aid specifically to help some of these children reintegrate into their societies as civilians, and to do it within a child rights framework. One of the simplest steps that needs to be taken is just to simply educate people about the nature of the problem.
Michael, thanks for your time tonight. I do appreciate it.
Okay, thanks so much. It's been a pleasure talking.
Yeah, that's Michael Wessels, author of Child Soldiers, From Violence to Protection, and a researcher for the Christian Children's Fund.
We hope you enjoyed this FM 103.2 podcast. To listen to more great audio, visit fm1032.com.au.